local mill. Work dried up, now the mill is ill. I can't pay my bills. Repo man is at my door. They used to call us working class, but we're just not working anymore. Well, I had me wife, kids, a car, and a boat. Things got bad, now the boat won't float. I don't like it. I'm too proud to be poor. They used to call us working class, but we're just not working anymore. We're not a working. We're not a working. We're just not working anymore. They used to call us working class.
Hello, folks. Welcome to the May 12th, 2012 edition of the Illinois World Labor Hour, brought to you over the air by WEFT 90.1 FM radio in Champaign, Illinois, and streamed worldwide at WEFT.org. The views and opinions expressed during this hour of broadcasting are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of WFT's manager, board of directors, or Prairie Air Incorporated. Now, here's Tom to acknowledge some of our underwriters.
This hour of programming is brought to you in part by Jobs with Justice, a coalition of union and community groups working for economic justice and workers' rights. Jobs with Justice holds regular meetings on the third Saturday of every month. For more information or for the unemployed and underemployed helpline, you can call area code 217-328-2295. That's 328-2295. And this hour of programming is being brought to you by you listeners of WEFT and by the Brotherhood of the Maintenance of the Way. The Brotherhood of the Maintenance of the Way employees are proud to continue their support for the Illinois World Labor Hour. A democratic union, the BMWE, celebrates the voice for labor on WEFT. It is our hope that all workers may share the same benefits that we enjoy, such as living wages, job security, away-from-home expense pay, early retirement, Canadian-style health insurance, and guaranteed year-round work. And the Illinois World Labor Hour is supported in part by you listeners of WEFT and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois.
Okay, thank you, Tom. I'm your host, David Johnson, here today with co-host Tom Thomas. We'll have some workers' interest news for us later in the show. The Labor Hour Cultural Corner, Tom's poem this week from his book, Cries for Justice, is entitled An Ode to Moms. And naturally, in honor of Mother's Day, which is tomorrow. And here with us today is also Pat Simpson, Bob Plesney, and Bill Grell. Now, here's Tom to kick off this week's edition of Workers' Interest News.
According to recent reports, payrolls of major employers are rebounding. Retail sales are growing, and the local housing market is stabilizing, and farmers are anticipating another year of strong commodity prices. Those factors make it appear that our local economy is getting stronger. Retail sales in Champaign County were up 2.3% in 2011 from the previous year, and sales for the first 2 months of this year were running 3.1% ahead of the same time last year. Automotive and gas sales were particularly strong in 2011, being up 6.7% from 2010. The University of Illinois payroll on the Urbana-Champaign campus is projected to be $897 million this year, up sharply from the $851 million in 2011, when many employees took furlough days. If the projections are correct, this year's total U of I payrolls will top the $894 million paid out in 2010. Enrollment at the local campus is expected to be up, with an estimated 42,700 students this coming fall, which is up from the 42,606 enrolled last fall, and that should bring a lot more jobs and a lot more money to our local environs.
It's very clear, of course, as everybody knows, that the University of Illinois is a major employer, and so therefore it's going to be particularly interesting with stories like that to hear from Gene Vanderport on the state of negotiations a little later today. I have a story here. This was a big week for marriage equality, and it was a big week for marriage equality within the labor movement also. In the wake of President Barack Obama's announced public support for marriage equality, a number of major labor unions have come out in support of the president's position and equality for the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community. This is a great development for a number of reasons. First, it's a clear statement from unions that they recognize that LGBT families are working families too. Second, it gives Obama strong public support on an issue that he is certain to be attacked on. And third, it is a good way to attract new people to the labor movement. Here's some examples of the unions that have come out with statements. Communication Workers of America, President Larry Cohen, said the Communication Workers of America stands with the president and those who support equality and human rights. We oppose all discrimination and recognize the direct linkage between civil and workers' rights and the attempts to divide Americans based on these issues. Then AFL-CIO President Richard Trumka said, working people believe in equality and fairness, and that's why we are happy to stand with millions of Americans and with President Obama in supporting marriage equality. LGBT working people face numerous inequities in the workplace and in society as they struggle to care for their families. Civil unions do not guarantee the 1,138 additional rights, benefits, and responsibilities that are triggered by the word, quote-unquote, marriage under federal law. United Food and Commercial Workers President Joe Hansen said, "I commend President Obama for his support of marriage equality, and I'm proud to support him as he takes this historic stand."
Thanks, Pat. I got a story here out of Britain. There was a major strike there this week. Thousands joined the strike to oppose austerity measures. Thousands of off-duty police officers marched through London on Thursday in a demonstration over pay and budget cuts, while tens of thousands of British public sector workers walked off their jobs to protest the government's proposed changes to pension plans. Union leaders said more than 400,000 civil servants, border agents, prison employees, and other workers joined the protest. However, the government said only about 100,000 had taken part. There are picket lines all around the UK. Hundreds of thousands, they say, walked off the job. Here's a few of the highlights. All the national museums in Wales were closed. At Manchester Crown Court, 95% of the staff were on strike and no trials had taken place. It says 599 out of 600 PCS members refused to cross the picket at the Ministry of Defense in Glasgow, and soldiers who earned 40% more were drafted in to cover their jobs. The Revenue and Customs Wolverhampton Deansgate Center had its strongest strike ever, with 81% of the members out, and 95% of union members were on strike at the Wigan Job Center, and Tate and National Museums were closed in Liverpool. So that was going on in London this week. On Thursday, people protesting cuts to their pension plans.
Yes, indeed. Also, it was interesting this last week with the Greek elections.
Right.
And, you know, it's really sad because if the Communist Party, which got, I think, about a little over 10% of the vote, would agree to a coalition Popular Front government with the other anti-austerity parties, working parties, that is, working people's parties, they could actually form a government because the current government has a very slim hold. You know, in a parliamentary system, if you get enough parties to form coalitions, you can act with a majority, you can form the new government. So we'll see what's going to happen there. But it's really interesting. I know the capitalists in Europe are really frightened because they've already been making public statements, like Merkel, prime minister of Germany, was sending sort of veiled threats to Greece about keeping to pay their debts and everything. But it's interesting, the least left of the party is the PASOK. If you look at their program and what they advocate, I mean, it's great because they're calling for a suspension of all debt payments until an audit is done, a complete audit of why Greece should be making these payments to the various banks and stuff.
I just, as I was coming in, driving in this morning to the station, heard that, of course, there was a failure a second time for it, with the left being able to form a coalition. And so now they're talking they may have to have elections again. So that should be really interesting.
Okay.
Yeah, plus the elections last weekend in France.
Yes, of course.
Where they got rid of Sarkozy.
Yes, and the new prime minister is Hollande, I think his name is.
Yes, yes.
And by-elections in England that the Conservative Party also lost significantly. So there's something going on. The winds of change are blowing in Europe.
That's for sure.
Okay. All right, labor educator Harry Kelber is interviewed by The Nation magazine. Reporter Josh Idelson, over eight decades in the labor movement, Harry Kelber has been a rank-and-file union leader, an author, and an academic. At 25, he edited two weekly labor newspapers. At 57, he helped found a labor college at Empire State College, which I believe Pat Simpson is well aware of. Used to be a colleague of Harry's. In 81, he ran for the AFL-CIO vice president. Now 97, soon to be 98 next month, he writes three columns a week for his website, The Labor Educator. The Nation talked to Kelber about his experience, the labor movement's past, his critique of its present, and what he sees in the future. Just a quick few highlights. One of the questions they asked Harry is, what does the past year's uprising in Wisconsin mean for labor? His response was, it is very heartening. And he said, my feeling is at some point there will be a Congress of all these people from all these separate actions around the country who will seek either to change the AFL-CIO or to set up an entirely new organization that will represent the needs and sentiments of working people. And asked about what can the labor movement learn from Occupy, Harry's response was, Occupy is doing a great job and certainly has a good outlook. They have made a tremendous impact on the American labor movement. I am positive that important changes will be taking place in the AFL-CIO because of it. So check that out in The Nation magazine.
According to a report issued by the Associated Press, U.S. wholesalers increased their stockpiles more slowly in March after seeing less growth in sales. The U.S. Commerce Department said last week that wholesale stockpiles increased by 0.3% in March, just 1/3 of the February increase. Sales in March were up 0.5%, about half the sales gains in February. Growth in restocking has slowed this year from the end of last year, contributing less to economic growth in the January to March quarter. Larger stockpiles require businesses to order more goods, and that typically leads to more factory production and economic growth. Still, it would take well over a month to exhaust all wholesale stockpiles at March's pace of sales. That is considered a healthy inventory-to-sales ratio and suggests that businesses will keep restocking to meet demands. Businesses had cut back on restocking last summer when some feared the economy was on the verge of another recession. However, when it became clear that it was not, many companies raced to rebuild their stockpiles and keep pace with consumer demands. Inventory growth is expected to remain positive throughout this year, and if so, it will be creating jobs and liquid assets for American workers. Pat?
Thank you, Tom. More than 235 mostly immigrant Black Car is the name of the firm, limo service, drivers from Town Car International, located in Long Island City, New York, voted by a 2-to-1 margin to be represented by the machinists IAM in their National Labor Relations Board election conducted at the company's headquarters by the federal government. This victory marks the beginning of a wave of union organizing campaigns commencing throughout New York City by Black Car drivers from numerous companies who have been stripped of their rights and dignity by their company owners. The Black Car drivers have tried repeatedly to reason with their company owners for better treatment and respect by their bases, but the owners have failed to listen to their issues. Most drivers work an average of 15 hours a day and have nothing to show for it. All they want is to be treated fairly so that they can make an honest living and support their families. Now the drivers have turned to the union for help. On another front for the IAM, workers at DirecTV in Compton, California, voted for a union more than 2 years ago. Although the company has stalled the process, very familiar, through legal appeals, on December 22, 2011, the NLRB issued a final decision that workers selected a union and certified the union. However, DirecTV is still denying workers their rights and has refused to bargain with their certified union, the IAM, also another very familiar pattern. Recently, company managers have harassed leaders about their union activities, including disciplining one worker immediately after he complained about missing wages from his paycheck. So victory in one instance, victory, but still much stalling in the second.
Thanks, Pat. Speaking of winds of change in Europe here, hundreds of Polish trade union members protesting against plans to raise the retirement age chained together barriers meant to keep them out of Parliament on Friday, locking lawmakers in for an hour. We will decide when they leave Parliament, the Solidarity trade union leader Peter Duda said as the protesters surrounded the building, many waving flags emblazoned with the union's logo. At least for once, we will decide something instead of them. The union members blocked lawmakers from leaving Parliament after they voted to raise the retirement age as part of the government's drive to put the public finances on a more sustainable path. The protesters then chained the barriers about 1 hour later. The reform has sparked some of the biggest protests in recent years, led by Solidarity, which is closely allied to the opposition. Under the reform, men and women will eventually retire at 67 instead of 65 for men and 60 for women, which is the present rule. Workers will be able to receive early partial pensions as part of a compromise reached within the governing coalition. So the bill, passed after a heated dispute between lawmakers, is expected to be cleared in the Parliament's upper chamber, then signed into law by President Bronislaw Komorowski, a close ally of Prime Minister Donald Tusk. So they chained the lawmakers in the Parliament there in Poland.
I like that.
Yeah, yeah. Solidarity's at it again over there.
Uh-huh. I was just going to say, it's good to see Solidarity awakening again.
The Solidarity, the only union Republicans like.
Well, that was back when it was easy for them to say, you know. But look, at the same time Ronald Reagan was making those statements in support of Solidarity, he busted the air traffic controllers union. So,
yes,
you know, that was pretty superficial. But anyway, Got an interesting story here. Tom Morello threatens to rage against Rahm Emanuel's machine. Yeah. Former Rage Against the Machine guitarist and current Night Watchman Tom Morello is butting heads with Mayor Rahm Emanuel of Chicago over the city's plan to pull a permit for a nurses union protest during the NATO summit coming up here in a couple weeks. Morello is listed as a speaker and performer, and the city said the additional turnout Morello attracts would exceed Daly's Plaza 1,000-person capacity. Chicago is my hometown, and the mayor's making me feel mighty unwelcome, Morello told Rolling Stone. I don't care what they say or do. I'm coming to rock out and speak my mind. We won't be silenced, and we won't be stopped. If Rahm Emanuel is so afraid of my popularity in Chicago, maybe I should run against him in the next election. In other words, F you, I won't do what you tell me. That's, I guess, in reference to Rahm Emanuel's a notorious statement of FU to people. But anyway, NBC points out Morello is technically from Libertyville, a suburb of Chicago. If Morello is indeed serious, the next mayoral election is 2015, so he has time yet to set up residency. Interestingly enough, Morello's background is similar to that of another Illinois politician, the son of an American mother and Kenyan father who abandoned him as an infant. He had graduated from Harvard University with a degree in social studies. Here's a little thing. If you go to Morello, there's a whole article here, a bunch of tweets and everything of why is Rahm Emanuel so afraid of the Night Watchman? So stay tuned, folks. I think this NATO thing coming up is going to be really interesting. I know there's going to be a lot of people mobilizing from Champaign-Urbana. I think the graduate employees, has been organizing buses. And I think Pat's got something on that later in the show, I believe. So, okay, Tom?
Under a plan announced last Wednesday by the U.S. Postal Service, many of the post offices in East Central Illinois will be having shorter window hours. Most of those offices are open 8 hours a day, but under the new strategy, some will be open for only 2 or 4 or 6 hours per day. The Postal Service had earlier proposed closing some of its smallest post offices, but after Congress intervened, the Postal Service put a moratorium on closings through May 15th and offered the reduced hours plan affecting many more post offices as an alternative. Last July, the Postal Service had proposed closing about 3,700 post offices. This new strategy would reduce hours at about 13,000 different post offices, removing many from the prior closure list. Next week, the Postal Service is expected to announce changes to its plan to close up to 252 mail processing centers. The new reduced hours plan will not affect post offices or postal stations in larger cities. Under the plan, retail business hours would be modified, but access to the retail lobby and to post office boxes would remain unchanged. As a result, places like Champaign-Urbana and Danville and Rantoul would remain unchanged.
Okay, just remind everybody, too, because of that story, I want to remind everyone that today is the Letter Carrier's food drive. And if you've got canned good, please send it out for your mailman. And I was just at the post office this morning, and some of them are regular listeners of the Labor Hour, and commented on they loved, they saw my T-shirt. I'm wearing a T-shirt that says Rage Against the Machine, and they said they liked Bill Gorell's playing of the Rage Against the Machine music in the past and stuff. I'd like to hear some more of that in the future. And anyway, we got to get some of those postal workers on to talk about the outrageous system that's really messing with them here recent years.
Well, speaking of Rage Against the Machine, I thought things were starting to look up a little bit years ago when the Battle of Los Angeles was the number 2 selling album of that year.
What year was it?
I'm not sure. It was the same year that the number 1 album was Santana's Supernatural.
Okay.
Yeah, that was early 2000s.
Okay,
2000. But, okay. Yeah, I couldn't believe it because that was a pretty radical record.
Yeah, indeed. So, any more news stories?
I got a quick one. Well, I'll make it quick. Fortune came out with their list of the best companies to work for.
Oh, okay. That'll be interesting to hear.
Yeah, and these companies are also on the Fortune 500 as the top 500 companies. So number 1 this year was Google, and they say they got bocce courts, a bowling alley. There's food. They got 25 cafes company-wide, all gratis, wrote one Googler. Employees are never more than 150 feet away from a well-stocked pantry. Also in the top list, there is NetApp, NuStar Energy, Qualcomm, Devon Energy, Whole Foods Market, Intel, Marriott International, American Express, Nordstrom, And Starbucks, they ranked 73rd on that list. That,
wait a minute here.
Well, they got some people. Do the ranking, though.
Yes.
Yeah, Fortune. So it says the company's massive part-time workforce, some 95,000 employees, gets full health insurance benefit, stock awards, and free coffee.
Okay.
Do those Google employees have a really nice defined benefit pension with their food courts and everything?
Doesn't say, Bill.
Yeah.
What was the methodology for this ranking? Did they explain that?
I don't have that with me.
No, I'm really wondering how they.
Yeah.
I think they go by employees filling out surveys. Yeah.
That's what I was wondering.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. I think so.
Well, we all know about Starbucks' attempts to resist any kind of unionization mm-hmm. among its employees. Also, I should point out that Whole Foods has been accused of anti-competitive marketing strategies that essentially meant that they came to dominate in the very expensive natural foods market.
They're real anti-union, too.
And they also are very anti-union. As a matter of fact, I believe the CEO, and I can't remember his name at the moment, has contributed to conservative causes and think tanks.
And if somebody, and the thing is, nobody's just tried to organize Google yet. Maybe they're all so happy there. But I'm sure that they would turn out. What was their motto? Do no evil or something?
Something like that.
I'd like to see it if they had a serious organizing campaign, how evil they'd get.
Well, what about them setting up the whole security apparatus for China as far as blocking internet access for their citizens and setting up the, I guess, eavesdropping? So they've already done evil. But anyway, we got a song here from Tom Morell, the One Man Revolution, and we'll be right after that. We'll be back with Tom Thomas's Poem of the Week and our very special guest, Gene Vanderport.
1, 2, 3, 4. The cabs don't stop on the street where I live. They called the cops, found a noose in my garage. Now how about that? So tonight I'm in the bushes with a baseball bat. 'Cause I'm a one man, I'm a one man, I'm a one man revolution. I'm a one man, I'm a one man, I'm a one man revolution. The time is nigh, the day is dark, there's only solution. I'm a one man, I'm a one man, I'm a one man revolution. On the streets of Havana, I got hugged and kissed. At the Playboy Mansion, I wasn't on the list. On the streets of Cape Town, shit's ready to blow.
Now come to that portion of the program of the Illinois World Labor Hour, the Cultural Corner, with Tom Thomas's Poem of the Week, An Ode to Moms.
Men and women work together in most of our jobs that are done, but there is one thing no man can do, that's birth a daughter or a son. A woman's obligation to all the offspring that she brings forth gives her the right to be called mom, a title of eternal worth. From when you skinned your little knee to when you graduated school, your mom was right there by your side because you were her little jewel. A mom works hard each day and night to teach her children wrong from right. Sometimes she has to work a job, but still can teach you to fly your kite. We celebrate a Mother's Day, but only one day of the year, and mom should be celebrated every day that you have her here. Whether it was a tummy ache or boogeymen sneaking at night, your mom was there to quell your fears and show you everything's all right. Every single day of the year for mom should be a special day, because without a loving mom, no child would ever find their way. An Ode to Moms was written at the Poets Loft in Champaign, Illinois in the spring of 2010 and was brought to you live today, May 12, 2012, here on the Illinois World Labor Hour on WEFT 90.1 FM in Champaign, community radio for East Central Illinois.
Okay, thank you, Tom. Service Employees International Union 73's new professionals unit is encountering stiff resistance from the University of Illinois. Last week, these professionals who provide much-needed services for children all across the state reacted to management's bad faith, stalling and union busing behavior, with the only response they felt was left to them. They voted to authorize a possible strike. SEIU has given 10 days notice to the employer. We are open to negotiate now, as we have been since these workers chose to unionize. Management has not been, but we hope they will be now. If not, we are prepared to do what is necessary. We hope that we'll have the support of our allies at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign and in the community. The date we have selected is May 21st. At this point, we'd appreciate any and all other support for these new union members, including expressions of support to the president's office, president of the U of I. Any suggestions you may have, I'll be glad to try to answer them. Or Phil Martini can explain everything next week face-to-face when he's in town. Things are heating up, but we always stand together, and that is our strength. It's from Ricky Baldwin, and so stay tuned for updates on that. Pat?
I'll offer a little bit more on the NATO rallies and demonstrations. On Sunday, May 20th, at the invitation of the White House, the 28 national U.S. commanded and largely U.S. financed North Atlantic Treaty Organization, that's NATO, is meeting in Chicago from May 20th to the 21st, 2012. The G8 world economic powers originally planned to also meet the same week in Chicago, but they retreated to Camp David. The NATO generals and G8 heads of state and finance ministers are the team that is imposing austerity on the working people of the world in the interest of expanding profits. In many places, economic reform, quote unquote, is enforced at the point of a gun by drones, armies, and police. So the coalition against NATO / G8 war and poverty agenda, which I should also indicate includes some labor unions and unionists, are inviting you to protest to say no to the war and poverty agenda. They'll be meeting at noon at the Petrilla Bandshell, the corner of Jackson and Columbus in Chicago. That's in Grant Park. For more information, you can get in touch with the coalition at cang8.wordpress.com. And also, I should indicate that the Graduate Employee Organization is organizing buses from Champaign-Urbana. And if you want more information, you can contact them at the GEO website.
Okay, thank you, Pat. And don't forget to tune in to Labor's View TV this Sunday and every Sunday from 4 to 5 p.m. on Comcast Channel 6. And this Sunday's show is going to be film of the GEO strike back from 2008, the strike that only took 3 days to win, which happened at the same time as the Republic Windows and Doors occupation in Chicago, another quick victory. And both the Republic Windows and Doors through the UE, United Electrical Workers Union, and the GEO here locally shown in the way for the labor movement of how to win if you're serious and are willing to do what it takes to win. Also, just let everyone know, our thanks to all our listeners for our support during our spring pledge drive. WEFT is 15 donors away from raising 50% of our $20,000 goal. Have we heard from you yet? Simply go to our website at weft.org and pledge your support at our suggested levels. We have thank you gifts at those amounts, but no pledge is too small and none too large. Or send your contribution to WFT P.O. Box 1223, Champaign, Illinois 61824. That's P.O. Box 1223, Champaign, Illinois 61824. Okay, so also I want to let everyone know that the farmer's market started already. And Pat, you want to tell us a little details on some things to look for this summer for the farmer's market?
Well, I'm particularly interested in telling people about the farmer's market table that now is bringing a number of progressive groups together to hand out literature, to have a conversation with folks, to talk about the issues. And that includes Jobs with Justice, AWARE, CU, CPJ, Champaign-Urbana, Citizens for Peace and Justice, as well as AWARE. So please stop by. The people are staffing the table. Yours truly is there from time to time, as well as many other wonderful people. The other thing I want to mention is don't forget that our direct action workshop that's going to be occurring on May 26th at 9:30 to 5. This is something that's sponsored by Jobs with Justice. And for more information, you can email.
Yes, you can email at dlj725@hughes.net, or you can call 217-721-0583. That's 217-721-0583. And we just want to let everybody know this is not, I repeat, not a MoveOn.org affiliated event. Okay. So on that note, I want to welcome our special guest to the studio today, Gene Vanderport. Gene, thanks for coming in.
And the Chamber of Commerce thanks you for inviting me.
Oh, I bet. Kind of doubt that. But anyway, we wanted to we're kind of wanting to start this as a regular series with you to come in and give us kind of a monthly update on what's going on at the U of I, because it looks like things are kind of heating up over there, or stalling, whichever way you want to look at it.
Well, we have a very consistent policy of stonewalling, which is basically the MO, the modus operandi of the university. And we need to remind everybody that despite the changes that occur at the president's mansion, and by the way, there's a permanent U-Haul in front of that place, and the changes that occur among chancellors, I don't even know who the chancellor is. Hello, my name is.
Basically, they go with them pod things out in the yard.
Right, that's right, that's right. In a porta potty, we left one over.
Uh-huh.
So one does wonder about the course of bargaining in view of those kinds of environmental situations. So, but I have total faith in the GEO and other organizations. I mean, the good news is I think we've created one dynamite coalition of some incredible good unions who really take seriously the needs of the rank and file and are willing to take the actions necessary. Some of us know what those actions sometimes entail. And you know what? If it's time, it's time.
Yes. And, you know, even though we've had our criticisms of SEIU nationally, I don't know why, but this SEIU local here with Ricky Baldwin and Phil Martini is just excellent. I mean, they really represent their members, and they're not afraid to do what it takes to, to get the job done.
Well, that's kind of what the whole Occupy plus rank and file union democracy movement's been about. I mean, there's some close attachments between the two, connections between the two. But really what's happening, let's just face it, I mean, the labor movement's running real fast ahead of most of us. I remember a couple of demonstrations here where I had to figure out who was the leader, and I was the leader and had to run real quick to get in front of the parade. We get to Chase Bank. I said, we can't occupy Chase Bank. And, of course, they occupied Chase Bank. I said, well, where's my wife and where's your wife? They're in the bank. So, I mean, that's the kind of thing that's happening, and that's encouraging.
Chase Bank is occupying me for 17.94% right now.
Yeah, there you are. There you are. But on another note, I just want to bring this up about what's out there in the way of struggles. First of all, I want to thank Pat for bringing up what is going to be, I think, an incredibly important opportunity for us to vote with our feet one more time and talk about the policies of NATO, the G7+1. I'm giving France some credit. But that's going to be important that we keep that message out there. But also, and unfortunately, this is the bad news, is what we're hearing now in the way of a pension deal that's going to be.
Yes.
This is what we usually call the May massacres, right? I mean, we've had some of the worst labor legislation, some of the worst budgeting decisions made, usually around Memorial Day. Mm-hmm. When nobody's around, everybody's out of school, they're looking to go to Dave Johnson's for some bratwurst, and with the fact I'm inviting everybody. Bring your own bratwurst. But that's what they do. That's the Madigan approach, and we already know that Madigan and Rahm have this notion, they're open about it, about gutting the pension systems, and I don't think that's what the people voted for.
No, indeed, and this is the whole thing, is that they keep saying this is the only solution, it's the only solution for this crisis, but they don't talk about what the real solution would be. What would you advocate, Gene?
Oh, I think it's called a progressive income tax, a wealth tax. Mm-hmm. That really gets at them. I mean, I don't know if this is a whole new notion, but
right.
It's the Scandinavian in me.
Yeah, but they never mention it. They never mention it in the media, the corporate media. It doesn't exist. It's impossible to
do. They didn't even mention it on NPR. Okay. Okay, if they don't get it, I mean, gee, golly, but you guys do.
Gene, you know, there still are a lot of people out there, general public, that actually believe that, gosh and golly, those public employees, they have it so easy, those pensions, they're so plush, et cetera. Can you give us some of the details on what really those pensions are about?
Well, in a large part, you pay for them if you're an employee. You pay for them one way or the other, in terms of health care costs that you had to pick up, and in terms of delayed, defrayed. Compensation income improvements. So there's always been a trade-off there. And I got to tell you, I represented government employees in the federal sector, state sector, and the education sector. I've seen nobody get rich off their pension benefits unless they're a manager. Okay? I mean, those are the folks that are getting off. But normally it runs about 40% of your income, as if your bills are only 40% of what they were. So, I mean, that's the thing people need to remember. And the way they keep messing with the healthcare system, you keep picking up more and more and more. I mean, co-payments alone are more than what I used to pay for insurance in a year.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's the other thing going on.
Well, and the other thing is that for many public employees in the state, they don't get Social Security.
They don't get Social Security.
This is basically a substitute for a Social Security system that one could argue is inadequate. And in many cases, particularly if you're a low-income worker, we're also talking about averages. I know SEIU locals, some of their average pensions is $25,000 a year.
That's right. That's right. You can't, and that's the poverty level. No, right? That's a poverty level.
Yeah, that's where you spend the rest of your life as a greeter at Walmart.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, I know in Germany, where my wife's from, now, of course, this is under attack now because they've been so successful here in the United States pushing this down. But in Germany, workers, all workers, private sector, public sector, retire at 100% of what they were, their take-home pay. And plus, they have the free health care. And also, like my wife's aunt, when she got elderly, the government paid for a woman to come in and buy her groceries, clean her house once a week. You know, and so I mean, and there's, you know, it's just so much more humane, let's put it that way. And so that's the thing is like, why can't we have that here?
Right. Well, I think we know why we can't.
Yes.
But we can't. I mean, what we're proving places like Wisconsin and elsewhere is that no matter how much capital you bring in, how much that largesse comes in to support the ultra-right wing and the labor busters, we keep fighting back.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll come back with all the troops we need to go door-to-door, poll-to-poll, and get the folks out to, you know, make the political change that has to happen.
So anyway, let's talk a little bit more back to the local scene here in the U of I. Now, from what I understand, I guess there, of course, the U of I's typical thing is they negotiate with the different unions separately. And I heard that when the graduate employees, they're, at this point anyway, pretty much bargaining in good faith, but not so with some of the other unions.
Well, everybody's dumbfounded. We always expect that there'd be a dust-up between the GEO and U of I management. It's almost it's written into stone some way. So they were shocked to find a rather forthcoming a group of negotiators from the U of I. Now, me being suspicious, I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the minute we start talking about money or something in the way of some other benefits, the mood sometimes changes.
Mm-hmm. So. Isn't this to the U of I's advantage to basically bargain separately with the different unions?
Well, of course, and I think the thing that makes them really angry is that we all talk to each other now. I mean, it's not like, surprise, you got a 3% offer? Well, you got a 3% offer? You know what? I think they got 3%. So, I mean, it's that kind of thing that they're just now learning that we get it.
Mm-hmm.
They operate out of the same playbook, so we're just reading the same book.
But so that implies that for years there was no communication between the various unions at one point at the U of I?
I would say there was nothing like there is now.
Okay.
I mean, there was always some kind of communication. Mm-hmm. We wouldn't believe what that attorney, Steve, did for the on behalf of the U of I. Really, he did that. So, but now we have regular meetings, regular contact with each other. You know, we're in constant communication.
Okay.
Gene, I'm sure you can't give exact numbers, but certainly within the recent past, and I don't know in terms of current negotiations, the university administration has been charged repeatedly with bad faith bargaining with what's called unfair labor practice charges. Could you explain a little bit more about what that is to the folks out there and also give some sense if they're still engaging other than with the GEO at the moment in these kinds of practices.
Well, it's probably no accident that about every single labor entity has a series of ULPs, unfair labor practice charges, currently before the labor board. And, you know, we are guided in the education sector by the Illinois Education Labor Relations Act, and it requires good faith bargaining. Good faith bargaining means that you come with a position and you work towards a resolution of your various points of view. But when you come to the table and you go backward, right, and you offer something and say, oh, no, we didn't mean it, it's going to be this trade for that, that's bad faith bargaining. It's regressive bargaining. They do that. Oh, by the way, I can't say yes to that. I think it's a good idea, Dave, to propose, but I got to get some authority. You don't come to the table without authority, okay? So that's always a cop-out. Well, that darn Board of Trustees made me do it. So, I mean, those are the kinds of things that just aggravate us. We come prepared to do the job. These guys, the U of I bargainers tend to, not always, but they tend to play these games. And then here's the problem. If you file on a good faith issue with the labor board, or you file in regressive bargaining, well, you file that, and then when does it get heard? Okay, because they cut back the number of investigators for the labor board. So you get on a docket, and just maybe three contract cycles from now, you can get your ULP adjusted.
Boy, I tell you, that just doesn't seem like that works in labor's benefit, you know.
Well, that's why, you know, thank goodness we have the other alternative. You know, there's a lot of places in the state and other states where you don't have the right to engage in direct action or work stoppages, and sometimes that's what you got to do to deliver the message. And I must say, we're very pleased with the undergrad grant alliance and the GEO, you know, sticking behind us. We're all in it together. We fight the tuition hikes that are being imposed on behalf of the students. The students are fighting the anti-labor actions that are being imposed on labor. So that's a good sign.
Yeah, it's all interconnected, really, in the big
absolutely.
Picture. Yes,
absolutely.
One of the things that I'm always amazed about is the university likes to think of itself as this institution that is in the advance guard of protecting things like human rights or respect for human rights, et cetera, particularly if you would take a course, an international course, a global course, emphasis on human rights. Well, the reality is that worldwide at this point in time, though it may not be practiced, nevertheless, there is recognition that a basic human right is freedom of association and freedom of to collectively bargain.
Right.
And so what we're having here is an institution that is what they like to say, Janus-based. On the one hand, it talks about how there should be respect worldwide for such things. Chancellor Weiss, indeed, was involved in setting up various kinds of corporate codes of conduct for firms like Nike, et cetera, that says that you would have respect for unions and collective bargaining, and yet we see again and again the university engage in these kinds of practices. And I think it really is important to keep exposing that kind of behavior because it can at least embarrass to some extent and raise the question of legitimacy for the university.
Well, it corrodes the relations between management and labor. And so you come to the table and you don't trust them from the get-go. And it does not have to be that way. All right.
Okay, we're going to take just a real short break here with Walter Trout and Puppet Master. We'll be right back with Gene Vanderport.
Oh, actually, you did track 11, Dave.
Oh, I'm sorry, Bill.
Money rules the world.
Money rules the world. Okay, I tell you what, the two kind of interconnect, but yeah, okay, we'll play Money Rules the World. We'll be right back.
Presented
Okay, it was Walter Trout, Money Rules the World, and indeed, that's more true than you might believe. Gene, are there going to be some mobilization around these issues?
Yeah, well, let's talk most immediately about the pension issues. That legislation is hitting the proverbial fan this coming week. And the message we got yesterday, at least from the IEA, and I'm sure this is happening, the Illinois Case Association, I'm sure this is happening with the other unions, is to contact your legislators now. If they're supportive, make sure they're supportive and stay that way. If they can be influenced on other colleagues, ask them to make those contacts. This is no time to be messing with our pensions. So that's the most immediate thing.
Mm-hmm.
And second to that, of course, is this larger mobilization we're looking at around the NATO G8 event, G7 plus one.
You know, I saw some criticisms on. In fact, I was researching that Tom Morello story.
Mm-hmm.
There were some people saying one person posted, "What does the NATO summit have to do with healthcare?" In reference to the nurses thing, you know, and it's like obviously this person doesn't get the big picture, but I just throw that out there for.
I'll give you an example from just this week.
Yeah.
Basically, the Republicans in the House essentially said no cuts to defense, and
right.
this is in the context of the Defense Department
right.
saying they could take some cuts,
right.
and at the same time turning around and saying let's take money away from child care,
mm-hmm.
from food programs,
right.
etc. So that's an example of what the relationship is, and certainly it's not exactly the same kind of relationship, because what I was just talking about was in terms of our defense budget, but certainly in many cases what goes into NATO essentially is taken from something else,
yes.
and guess where it's taken from.
Absolutely true, and let's understand it. You know, why are we still providing resources for the Praetorian Guard? I mean, at what point do we say, give this up to somebody else, you know, like the UN or something? I mean, when did we get chosen?
One of the problems I've been seeing, and I've been really worried about that, is that we've destroyed our economy and our industry to the point where about the only leverage we have on the rest of the world is our debt to the rest of the world and our military.
You know, Eisenhower warned about this in his farewell address in 1961, the beware of the military-industrial complex. And it's power both, here domestically as far as, sucking our economy dry, corrupting our politicians, controlling our government, and, of course, internationally. I mean, how they impose their, this is the thing is that, originally the G8 and the NATO were going to be at the same, held at the same time in Chicago. The G8, I mean, that's the economic arm, if you will, of the beast. And the NATO, of course, is the muscle. It's the enforcer, we're not fighting for freedom in Afghanistan, Iraq, or wherever. It's about control of resources, control of markets.
Yeah, and we need NATO to give us legit, why am I saying that? The United States establishment needs NATO to give it legitimacy if it can't get it out of the United Nations.
Yes.
I have one concern about NATO. The NATO spokesperson that was announcing the meeting in Chicago called Chicago the capital of Illinois. So when the missiles go, is New York the capital of the United States? I mean, so I'm just a little concerned about their lack of geography.
Yeah, and I think that's a very good point, Pat, is that the thing is that there's, we're hearing, we don't have enough money, we got to cut pensions, we got to, cut health care, we can't have national health care in this country, state workers who have paid into the system can't get health care after retirement, they're just going to have to go and get it on their own, or, we don't have enough child care, or what about education, how working people can't even afford a college education anymore, and, our infrastructure is falling apart. I mean, the priorities are all screwed up. I mean, the priorities are, of course, tax breaks for the rich and more weapons and military involvement abroad. That's the thing. Our foreign policy, it does not benefit the people. It benefits the 1%.
Yeah, there it is.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that it's an interesting period where essentially we have corporations getting more voice because of decisions like Citizen United, and yet in terms of, for example, these protests, they've had to jump through many hoops in terms of various constraints and restrictions on the opportunity to voice free expression. And so on the one hand, what's happening is you get a situation where corporations, including the military-industrial complex, has more of a voice, and on the other side, you have citizens having fewer and fewer opportunities. We no longer, in a sense, really have government that represents us. In a sense, we have to go to the streets. That's our only option, and it's not there for us.
Yeah, indeed. And, you know, it's really disheartening to see that, you know, the 1% know, I mean, the people are angry. And what's their response? Instead of trying to find solutions, they're just basically, they're militarizing the police. I mean, they're basically willing to beat us in the streets, gas us in the streets, before they're willing to, give up one little penny of their wealth or power or privilege.
Well, and I also, I mean, I cannot have the program end without some reference to what happened with J.P. Morgan Chase this week.
Right? Oh, yes, indeed.
$2 billion loss, and that's only on the surface. So they do further investigation, they may find more. And this is in the context of also playing around with these phony derivatives that are supposed to be a hedge against risk. And essentially, these are the kinds of things that the Volcker Rule would attempt to regulate to some extent, and yet already, for many months now, the banks, particularly the big Wall Street banks, have been doing everything in their power to essentially deregulate what modest regulations came from Dodd-Frank, including the Volcker Rule. And it's an example of... Essentially, it's not just a question that they want every dollar they can. Not only do they want every dollar they can, because they want to gamble it, and if they lose it, make sure they get another dollar from us, the taxpayer.
Yeah, I mean, this is just something wrong with this system. I mean, the banks have too much power. That's for sure. I mean, they've got to be, you know, and until... Well, you know, of course, this is a it's all wrapped into corporate money, our system of legalized bribery in this country. I tell you what, we could go on and talk about this for another hour, really.
Well, I tell you what, Matt, I'm starting to believe all the Rothschild banker conspiracy stuff now anymore. I mean, just... It's going on right in front of you.
Well,
you know?
Except they're not. It's not the Jewish people they're doing it. It's people of all different persuasions, if you will. It's about greed, about money.
That's like that email you sent this week about Goldman Sachs and their tentacles and all of the stuff happening in Europe and Italy and Greece and stuff like that. That's
amazing. From The Independent, which is an excellent newspaper from the United Kingdom. So anyway, it looks like we've run out of time. Gene, thanks for coming in. We definitely want to get you back here next month.
Sure.
And give us another update and stuff.
Okay, my pleasure.
Okay, we're going to leave you with a little Tom Morello, and this is called Battle Hymns, and I thought this might be appropriate considering the battle with Rahm Emanuel going on. So this has been the Illinois World Labor Hour. Thanks for tuning in, and tune in next week at 90.1 FM, WFT.org. In the meantime, be safe, and power to the people.
Battle hymns for the broken, battle hymns for the misled, battle hymns for the wretched, the forgotten and the dead. Battle hymns of redemption, of solidarity and pride. Battle hymns we will be singing at the turning of the tide. The mothers and the fathers of those who come riding home in coffins in their military clothes, shiny medals pinned to their dead teenage chests while the trumpets blare, and you lie your best, so ask all you want from the dusk till the dawn, the answer's still no. Battle hymns for the broken, battle hymns for the misled, battle hymns for the wretched, the forgotten and the dead. Battle hymns of redemption, of solidarity and pride. battle hymns we will be singing at the turning of the tide.